Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Nicholas Pavich, and I represent the plaintiff appellant, Carla Knapel. Your Honors, we come before this Court on an appeal from the District Court's grant of the defendant's motion to dismiss. Ms. Knapel, the plaintiff appellant in this action, sued the Chicago Sun-Times, along with its online entity, in a four-count complaint based on an article that they published entitled, quote, "Is Carla Knapel's Affection Really Worth $5 Million?" The article was written by a Sun-Times employee, Richard Roper. Your Honors, we are here before the Court on a close question of Illinois law concerning defamation per se. The District Court erred in its interpretation of Illinois law in holding that the article at issue is reasonably capable of an innocent construction. Your Honors, there is a question of fact in this case, and that is whether or not the only reasonable interpretation of the article at issue is the false imputation to Ms. Knapel that she committed the crime of prostitution with the professional basketball star Michael Jordan. Your Honors, in the article, Mr. Roper begins as your Honor well knows, Mr. Roper describes Ms. Knapel as the type of woman who, when she, quote, hears the ka-ching of a cash register, when she sees a horny athlete. The article also imputes that Ms. Knapel practiced the oldest profession based on her foregoing actions and based on the money that she received from Michael Jordan. Your Honor, Mrs. Knapel's well-pled allegations are that the article is not susceptible to a reasonably innocent construction. Here, the article's statements and their natural and obvious meanings of the words published by the defendants impute the crime of prostitution to Ms. Knapel. Your Honors, as stated in Ms. Knapel's brief, the District Court disagreed with Judge Kokoris and his holding in the Muzikowski case on remand from this court. Specifically, the District Court, Judge St. Eve, incorrectly assumed that the holding by Judge Kokoris that motions to dismiss should not be granted on the basis of an innocent construction rule should only be applied to publications that do not literally name the plaintiff. We contend that's incorrect. As the facts of this case demonstrate, the holding, this court's holding in Muzikowski, should not be interpreted so narrowly as to preclude Ms. Knapel from conducting discovery to support her interpretation. Your Honor, we contend that discovery is necessary in this case because we would discover specifically, Your Honor, we would seek to take the depositions of Mr. Roper regarding his knowledge of the facts of this case and his summary of it. Additionally, Your Honor, we believe that Mr. Roper's knowledge came from another reporter at the Sun-Times by the name of Mark Brown, who was covering the case. Moreover, we would also seek to take the deposition of Michael Jordan to, in fact, show that that the Sun-Times falsely imputed that Ms. Knapel traded sex for money with him. So we would seek to take those three depositions, Your Honor. We believe that the reason why those depositions are necessary, Your Honor, is to show that, like in the Muzikowski case, Your Honor, before this court, our interpretation of the article, Ms. Knapel's interpretation of the article, that it falsely imputed that she committed the crime of prostitution. We seek to show that is the only reasonable interpretation, Your Honor. Here it is a question of fact, Your Honor, just as it was for Muskowski. However, there are facts outside of the article that we seek to take discovery on. Because they may be relevant to the issue of its interpretation, Your Honor. Your Honor, the issue is the reasonableness of the interpretation. Your Honor, the issue is the reasonableness of the interpretation and whether or not it's the only interpretation. Not in light of Judge Saini's holding, Your Honor. The issue is whether or not the article falsely imputes, whether or not the only reasonable interpretation is whether or not it falsely imputes she committed the crime of prostitution, or as Judge Saini held, whether or not Ms. Knievel is merely being charged with immoral conduct. No, Your Honor, there are additional issues as well. Another issue, Your Honor, is that whether is the district court's consideration of statements in Cooks County Judge's Richard Siebel's June 12, 2003 memorandum order and opinion, which was submitted by the defendants with their motion to dismiss. Your Honor, in the district court's opinion, the opinion repeatedly refers to Ms. Knievel's non-disclosure agreement, as well as Ms. Knievel's non-disclosure contract. Those are terms exclusively used by Judge Richard Siebel, the Cook County judge, in his opinion. No, Your Honor. However, well, that's no. What I'm driving at is that the district court's consideration of the Cook County Circuit Court opinion. Your Honor, it's our position that in so doing, the motion to dismiss should have been converted into one for a motion for summary judgment, whereby we would be allowed discovery and whereby we would be allowed to go to a trier of fact with all the facts. Your Honor, our position is that that is the only reasonable interpretation. However, even if this court disagrees that is the only reasonable interpretation, we are still entitled to address whether or not the reasonableness of the district court's opinion that the article only imputed unchaste behavior to Ms. Knievel, and we should be allowed to take discovery to eliminate the argument that that is a reasonable interpretation. No, Your Honor. in a case where the natural and obvious meanings of the words used do not impute or are not defamation per se. And the distinction from our case, between our case and that case, is that there is here an ambiguity in the statement that the district court seems to have disagreed with on our interpretation. At least it appears to interpret the column in its own way. We disagree with that interpretation. But in any event, if there is an ambiguity, what I would be looking for, Your Honor, is number one, and a deposition of the author of the article and the understanding that he had of the facts and circumstances of the case as it then was before Judge Richard Siebel's opinion was issued, which, by the way, was improperly included in our article. That would certainly be part of it, Your Honor. That would certainly be part of it. I think that my rebuttal light is on, Your Honor. So if there are no further questions, I'll take my seat. I don't know, Your Honor.
In this case, did the prosecution be direct offer that money for sex? Where in the article does it say that?
Your Honor, it's our position that based off of the entire reading of the article, or the entire article, there are three separate and distinct statements in the article, which implies that Ms. Knafel committed the crime of prostitution.
Where in the article does it say that she conditioned having sex with Michael Jordan prior to the act?
That can be imputed from from three statements. Number one, the ka-ching of the cash register sentence. Additionally, at the conclusion of the article, it can also be imputed because it says based off of the money she has received and is going to receive, it sounds like she is someone who is practicing a profession much older than hairdressing. And I'm paraphrasing there, Your Honor, but only slightly. Thank you, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, I'll switch. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Damon Dunn. I represent Chicago Sun-Times, Inc. and Sun-Times Online. May it please the Court. I intend to address why the column was subject to at least one innocence instruction, and also why the alleged defamatory passages did not convey an objectively verifiable fact. Unless the Court has questions with respect to the other reasons we cited for affirmance, such as the specificity, substantial truth, and actual malice, I intend to stand on my brief with respect to those issues. There's no question that there's a smirk in Mr. Roper's work. His lifestyle commentary is devoted to puncturing presumptions. It's to smirking. And the Illinois Supreme Court's innocent construction rule and the First Amendment are designed to protect even obnoxious. I think that you would really have to look at the context. I can't really conceive of one in which it would meet the test under Milkovich, because it's... Sorry, Judge Evans? Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, because in a sense, when you're smirking, you're negating the factual context that you're setting forth. And that... I think that's why the innocent construction rule was crafted in Illinois as an overlay on that First Amendment argument, and to prevent that kind of interpretation. Well, in the Salamone versus Hollinger case, the Illinois Appellate Court recently looked at whether or not reputed crime figure would constitute a fact, and found that it would not. And I think probably a prostitute falls in the category of a reputed crime figure. And what you're basically saying is that that might be the case, but it's not necessarily the case. I would say no, unless you could point to something else in context that would, yeah. Taken in isolation, I'd say that that's like the Salamone case, or the Brennan case, or even the case Schiavarelli, where it said, the evidence suggests you're cheating the city. And the Illinois Appellate Court said, well, you know, that's not enough. There's no real context to hang that on. Well, I would certainly argue that it doesn't. I think that that's a qualifier. And that qualifier would be enough under the innocent construction rule to give you a reasonable innocent construction. Well, now you're getting into the question of an opinion based on disclosed facts, which is one of the defenses we raised here. I think that, again, depends on the context. If the law seems to be if the author doesn't, or the author is implying that he knows facts that he's not putting in the column. I think that would... I think that once again we're back to textual analysis. I think the court looks at, all right, and in fact we'll just, you know, it's not exactly your fact pattern, but we can look at this case. We can see that Mr. Roper discloses certain facts on which he may or may not come to a judgment. And those facts are... Knapel claimed, quote, Jordan promised to pay her $5 million not to discuss her affair. And Knapel stated to the press, well, and it may well be, but I guess that's an issue for the Knapel versus, or Jordan versus Knapel case that the Illinois courts will throw down. Knapel stated to the press that she had honored the contract by remaining publicly silent. And in Roper's summary, in other words, you had sex with a famous wealthy man, and you claim he promised to pay you $5 million to keep quiet about it, and now you want your money. When he discloses those facts from which he then bases his opinion, any reader can look at those facts, which are not challenged by the plaintiff, and decide for themselves whether they agree or disagree. And that's the opinion based on disclosed fact rule, which Illinois holds is not actionable. Had he not disclosed those facts and then said, I think, you know, Ms. Knapel is probably a prostitute, which he most definitely did not write. In fact, the word prostitute or prostitution never appears. I looked this up, and there's a body that says the oldest profession is spying. So... Well, I don't think Mr. Roper is that much of a theologian, so he probably didn't have that in mind. I believe that when he's talking about that, he's talking about, just as the district court found, that Mrs. Knievel was alert to the financial benefits of hooking up with a celebrity. And there's no quid pro quo involved. Those benefits could involve travel or shopping or a hush money contract, for all that that matters. But none of that is prostitution. He may have been saying, you know, she's an avaricious person. I don't know the answer to the question, and I think that's the reason why we have the innocent construction rule. So we don't survey the population as to what an author means or what he might mean. Fine. I might have come to that conclusion, but I don't know if I would have definitely come to that conclusion. And I don't know whether that would have been specific enough. But here we also have, he doesn't say she engaged in the world's oldest profession. He says, based on what she's doing, she sounds more like that than what she claims that she is. And in a sense, he's actually inverting it and saying, well, if she sounds like that, that's probably not what she really is, but she's, you know, advising her not to proceed with her. Well, I think in part the equivalent of the reputed is I just cited three distinct examples from the article where he says he's not talking about prostitution. He's talking about this contract where she claims she wants to get $5 million. So in that sense, I think this case is even on stronger footing than Salamone. And well, it does say based on the money that she had gotten, which I think refers back in the context to the money that Roper continually cites in the column. So I think he's got more contextual support than in the Salamone case, which actually I happen to argue. I'd cite another case, which is the Harrison case, Harrison versus Chicago sometime, where the headline said, the mom kidnapped the daughter. And you know, you can look at the definition of kidnap and you will see there are civil kidnapping, there's criminal kidnapping. And unless there is a defined, you know, statement in here that says, you know, there's a quid pro quo, she transacted money, sex for money, which doesn't appear anywhere here, I think you're either in an innocent construction or you're in a situation, and this was what we thought was our even strongest argument below, but it's just not a verifiable fact that's conveyed. I mean, if you look at the Knievel versus ESPN case, which we cited and attached to our brief, it just came down before we filed, Montana doesn't even have an innocent construction rule. But the court nevertheless found that pimp, as a matter of law, due to the slang and jargon on the website, was not meant to be taken literally. And if you look at the Illinois court's most recent view of the opinion defense, if you wanted to call it, which is the Brennan versus Kadner, there it said you could refer the attorney for a mail fraud prosecution. And the court, citing the factors, said that, you know, that's not really a literal accusation. And here we have a lot of that same hyperbole and loose language. I mean, you know, Roper cites ka-ching and likens Jordan to a cash register. That's a hyperbole. No one really believes that Roper sat down in his nightclub for a midnight snack of milk and cookies. I don't think anybody believes that he thinks that the picture-taking cell phone is one of the great innovations of our time. The column is replete with that kind of language, and even when he gets to his opinion, it's Knievel's case exudes class. Well, that's clearly sarcasm. And when he says she makes herself sound like something, then I think he's really saying that she sounds like something that she's not. And in a sense, he's affirmatively negating any factual imputations. In a sense, we're back to the smirk. And the whole point of the innocent construction rule is that we don't take surveys and we don't depose authors about what they might have meant. If a judicial officer finds that there is a reasonable construction, Illinois wants the case to end. And the reason it does is because it wants to foster that kind of hard-hitting journalism, which otherwise will leave authors and newspapers and media tied up in litigation for any types of purpose. And this purpose, obviously, the plaintiff wants to take a lot of discovery. And the press might decide, well, if we don't really have a defense except to prolong litigation in a federal courthouse, well, maybe we'll pull our punches. And that's why... I think there you're getting back to that, what are the facts laid out from which that opinion is based? And I think of the Howell versus Blytek case. I mean, Illinois is pretty strong, and there are a number of federal cases from other circuits, and even the Wilkow case in this circuit, where they're saying, look, if the author's laid out his facts, and we'll note in this case, there doesn't seem to be any dispute about the actual facts in Roper's column. He seems to have quoted her correctly and copied, you know, paraphrased the complaint correctly. Then whatever the reader's or the author's judgment is, it's not defamatory. And this court in Sullivan versus Conway, you know, faced a direct accusation of, you know, whether the lawyer was a poor lawyer and said, you know, that's just not feasible to submit to a jury. And the innocent construction rule is really an outgrowth of that. It's not a crime to be a poor lawyer. And it's not defamatory to be avaricious. And it may be that the column imputed sexual promiscuity, which is one of the per se categories, but I think we have a strong substantial truth defense, and that's why Knafel positioned it the way she did. But in doing so, her position changes and supplements the actual wording in the column. I mean, she doesn't really point to an identifiable statement of fact which says that she committed prostitution with Jordan, whereas the district court was able to point to several examples where Roper's actually saying something very different. He's saying it's this counterclaim. Now, I don't even know that Roper passes a judgment on that counterclaim. I mean, the column is so non-literal, it's more asking questions in a way that poses the reader to make a judgment rather than him making a judgment himself. But in a sense, I think he's saying this is just, you know, a classless thing to do in his opinion. And that's the kind of moral judgment which this court held in Wilkow is just not actionable. And as for converting the case to a Rule 56, I think the district court said very clearly there's just a textual analysis here. She didn't have to look beyond the pleading. She needs something, I think, more than a suspicion to overrule the court when it's being explicit on that. And finally, with respect to the Musicalski case, I think Musicalski is really looking at that Bryson corollary for of and concerning. That's what the case is dealing with, and that's why this court said that, you know, at that particular aspect, perhaps there is a factual question. And in fact, in the movie, in Musicalski, there was a question as to whether there was even a real-life counterpart to the fictional character in the film. We don't have that. We have a straightforward textual analysis. And if you were to import that Musicalski standard to the standard textual innocent construction rule analysis, I'd suggest you'd be re-importing the balancing test, which the Illinois Supreme Court says you're not supposed to do. And, you know, it would put plaintiffs or defendants in a peculiar position in federal court because you wouldn't even have to put the facts in. You wouldn't have to attach the article. And the next thing you know, you could be litigating, you know, until you can finally get the article in front of the court and somehow get that textual analysis in front of the court. So I don't think this court intended to extend Musicalski that far. I think it should be read narrowly with respect to the oven concerning rule. My time's up, but all I'll do is ask you to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I want to pick up on something that opposing counsel just mentioned, which is Mr. Roper's smirk. This is not a smirk. This article does not have a smirk in it. And moreover, I don't believe that constitutes a defense to a defamation per se action. This was an attack on Ms. Knafel. whereby Mr. Roper connected the ka-ching of the cash register to her conduct, which he claims was something that was of the oldest profession. And that is the quid pro quo that I believe my counsel was mentioning before that he says is lacking. He also mentioned that there is no verifiable facts in this. There are two discrete factual elements in this article. Number one, that Ms. Knafel sought money in exchange for sex with Michael Jordan. And number two, that Ms. Knafel received money in return for her sexual favors. Each of these elements is factual. They are not issues of opinion. In the district court, the defendants already conceded that statements which impute the commission of a criminal defense are defamatory per se. The district court concluded also and cited some well-settled Illinois law that when you have a statement concerning the violation of a crime, those words, the libelous words, do not have to state the commission of the crime with the particularity of an indictment. And that's exactly what's happening here. The article, when it is taken as a whole, which is what you do under Illinois law, which is what courts are supposed to do, when they look at any article for defamation, they can only be left with one reasonable interpretation, and that interpretation is that it was defamation per se. Your Honors, I see my time is up. If there are no further questions. Thank you, Your Honors.